Thank you for coming to the podcast. This is Top Turtle MMA Podcast on CageSidePress.com. I'm Daniel Gubby Freeland, joined as always by my co-host Shockwave Dave Tremonte. The UFC is back in the apex this weekend for UFC Vegas 88, headlined by Tai Tuivasa versus Marcin Tybura. Well, of course, we're breaking down that main event fight as well as two other of our favorite main card fights as part of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays, where we'll also give you an underdog and a parlay that we think will make your wallet fat this weekend. Plus, as always, we're giving you the interviews you know and love. Kicking off the show this week is our interview with Isaac Dalgarian, who's getting ready to fight Christian Rodriguez this weekend. And a little bit later on in the show, we'll be talking to Ultimate Fighter 31 winner Kurt Hollebaugh. And before we get to any of that great content for you, I do have to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But no mistake, this is no sports drink. This is a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. It's a drink that's, well, it's really drinkable. Should you stretch before you drink it? It certainly couldn't hurt. Because Game Up is not a hard seltzer. Hard seltzers just didn't work out. Game Up plays entirely in a league of its own, and it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit, punch, and grape, and hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Game Up is for MMA maulers, urban fitness freaks, peak-bagging badasses, tough mutter mothers, beer league brawlers, hot yoga hotties, high handicap hackers, committed cornhole huckers, or even just professional poolside posers who game up and get after it. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team. Game Up brings you this episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast, and it starts right now.
The hosts are ready. The fighters are ready. Listeners, make some noise if you are ready for Top Turtle MMA with Shockwave and Gumby.
All right, and joining me today is Isaac Dalgarian, who fights Christian Rodriguez at UFC Vegas 88. That fight is on March 16th. So, Isaac, I wanted to start here. You know, obviously, the last time we had talked, you had not yet debuted in the UFC. Not only do you get that big first win under your belt, but you do so in emphatic fashion, taking care of Francis Marshall. Give us a little bit of how it feels. Is it set in yet that you've made your UFC debut and made a big splash in the meantime?
Oh, yeah, it definitely set in. But for the first couple of weeks, I was back at home. Just kind of going about my normal life and trying to figure out, like, cope with it. I was like, this is crazy. I can't believe I just did it like that, you know. Having a UFC debut go like that is rare, and it was just such a blessing to be able to perform like that and come out of the fight with no injuries.
Absolutely, and I know we talked, too, about the fact that, you know, you sort of had this expectation of first-round knockouts. You had done it, you know, all through your amateur career, all through your pro career, and then you come in and you do it in your UFC debut. Did it feel just like one of those other fights? Did it feel, you know, obviously Francis Marshall, a tough guy, but did it feel just like, you know, as easy as it had been all along?
Yeah, man, that's just my style. I'm able to cause a lot of damage in a short period of time, you know, so... The only way to really get out of that is to not fight and just defend yourself. So, I expected it 100%. It felt like higher stakes, but other than that, the fight felt the same.
Well, that's great to hear. Now, obviously, you know, it was a spectacular win. It was a dominant win, but it was also on a fight card that was sort of littered with big victories and huge knockouts. You didn't wind up with a bonus. Were you a little bummed out about that? Because that's a hell of a debut not to get a bonus.
Yeah, I was pretty upset about it, to be honest, man. I don't know what more I could have done, but, you know, hopefully we get one this fight. That's what I'm looking forward to. But, yeah, man, I was pretty upset because I'm trying to change my life. I do the sport for my family, and, you know, I wanted to change their lives and put them in a position to be great themselves. So, you know, my younger sister, she just started wrestling this year in high school. And, you know, I wanted to get her out here, moved out here with me so she can train and, you know, take care of my family in general. So that was the biggest thing.
And so, you know, obviously we're looking towards that in the future. But I got to ask you, too, because, you know, you mentioned family. I know your family's about to get a little bit bigger. So, you know, like, what's that like now preparing for a UFC fight with that on the horizon?
Oh, it's been amazing. It hasn't really changed much. You know, my daughter's going to be born a few weeks after this fight, but my lady, she has done nothing but support me throughout this. And she understands what I'm going through, cause she's a fighter as well. So, you know, she doesn't put too much on it. She knows I'm in training camp right now, even though it's the hardest part of her pregnancy. And, yeah, we just make it work, man. It's a lot of sacrifice on her end, just making sure everything's there, and she doesn't necessarily get the attention that she deserves right now. But after my fight, I'll make sure she gets it, you know?
I love that. And I assume 3 weeks is enough that you don't worry too much that you fly out for fight week and all of a sudden we have a situation.
Yeah. It was a busting too, because Sean Shelby, he got it changed. So the fight was originally scheduled. We were scheduling it for April 6th. Well, my daughter's due April 7th. And I was like, that's not going to work, guys. Come on now. And so luckily they got it switched to April 16th. So that was a big blessing for me.
Well, that's awesome that the UFC worked with you on that one. Now, I obviously want to talk about your training leading into this fight too, because, you know, I love asking questions of people at Factory X, because everybody seems to have a slightly different, you know, a slightly different feel to the gym, but it works for everybody. And it's a gym that's well known for its stand-up game, right? Like, it's Muay Thai. It says Factory X Muay Thai and MMA. It says it right on the name of the building. But obviously, like, the way you've gotten most of your work done is by dominating on the ground, right? The ground and pound, the absolutely piecing people up once you get them down, the submission game. Not that you don't have some hands too, but, you know, that's sort of been the signature of most of your wins here. So my question for you is, how does that all blend together? Do you feel like you're in just the perfect place because it's a great striking gym? Do you feel like, you know, that maybe people don't know how good the wrestling is there? How have you sort of blended into the fabric that is Factory X?
Yeah, no, it's perfect for me, man, because there's such high-level strikers out here. And, you know, that's where I want to be able to shine as well. So it's a great fit striking-wise. And then grappling-wise, I bring something else to the gym. Really, the only thing that they've been criticized about here at Factory X is their wrestling ability. Their jiu-jitsu is good. Their striking is good. But the only criticism they get is their wrestling. And something that I bring into the gym is I'm one of the best wrestlers in the world. So a lot of those guys, they get to train with me, and their wrestling is getting a lot better. You know, like guys like Yusuf Zalal will be back in the UFC very soon, and he struggled with the wrestling his first stint in the UFC. He's not going to have that problem when he gets back in at all. I have no doubt in my mind, because he trains with me. Like I said, I'm one of the best in the world, and if he can get up with me on top of him, he can get up with any of these guys to take him down. So there's no problem there. I think it's a perfect blend, perfect mesh. And I couldn't be happier here.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Now, I obviously also have to ask about the recent events, too, because we're coming, you know, this interview is just a week after seeing Brandon Royval, you know, absolutely rise to the top of the flyweight division with a big win over Brandon Moreno. I know people talk about what a great gym guy Brandon Royval is. So tell me, you know, just a little bit about how happy you and the guys at the gym were seeing, you know, such a monumental win for him.
Oh, it's such a huge win for him and us as a gym. You know, I mean, he beat Brandon Moreno. Dude had been a champion two times, I think. So a huge win for Brandon, you know, super happy for him to get that win. And one thing that I was super happy about is when he fought for the title against Pantoja, he used a lot of jiu-jitsu, but he didn't really use the jiu-jitsu to get up. And in this fight, during the training camp, every time he'd get in the cage, he'd come out and ask me what he needed to change. And I'm like, bro, you have to get up. You can't just jiu-jitsu. You have to get up. It's 2024. It's not 2000 anymore. Everyone's hit to jiu-jitsu. So, he pulled that stop out on Moreno. He started the scramble with his jiu-jitsu, found his way back to his feet. And that's something that I was super proud and happy to see that he changed in this game.
I love it. Now, let's talk about you adding those pieces to your game and what you're going to be doing in the cage, because you got a great matchup here for excitement in Christian Rodriguez, who is a guy who hasn't really shied away from grappling tangles, right? Like, this guy likes to get in a dust-up on the feet, but he also doesn't mind getting a dust-up on the mat. So when they came to you with that name, you know, Christian Rodriguez, what were sort of your first thoughts about him as an opponent?
My first thought on him was that he's good everywhere, you know. he doesn't really have a lot of holes in his game. I mean, his takedown offense isn't the greatest, but he knows how to drag a fight out, and he's calm and patient the whole fight, whether he's taking damage or not. So I thought it would be a good fight for me because he's more of a seasoned vet, and I think that he will push me beyond what I feel like I'm capable of. So I think that it's a good fight, and if I can put on another great performance, you know, I have the ability to finish this fight in the first round. Not saying it's going to go that way. It's possible, but Christian's tough. So we'll kind of see on that front. But I just think either way it goes, he's going to bring something good out in me.
Well, you kind of alluded to it and maybe danced around it a little bit, but I always like to end these ones by trying to drag a prediction out of you guys. So tell me, come March 16th, how do you see this one ending?
Man, I see it going one of three ways. I see it going Isaac Bulgarian first round finish. I see it going Isaac Bulgarian decision due to Christian not really attacking on the ground, just trying to survive. Or I see me getting robbed by the judges and him squeaking out a decision like he has in the past. So I think it's going to go one of those three ways. Hopefully not the latter one. But, yeah, that's what I see going on.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This has been Isaac Dolgarian, who fights Christian Rodriguez at UFC Vegas 88. Once again, that fight, March 16th. Isaac, thank you so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Yes, of course, brother. Anytime, let me know. We'll get it done.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview with Isaac Dolgarian. I, once again, am Daniel Gumby-Freeland. Joined now by my co-host, Shockwave Dave Scramante. Dave, we had an exciting UFC 299 this past weekend, but I'm actually looking forward here with you because Sean O'Malley turned away Marlon Chito Vera as we predicted he would. And it seems like now, despite what he's calling for, despite what he's asking for, he's on a collision course with Merab Dvalishvili in a fight that I think we're both very excited about. So here's my question for you. How do you think that fight goes? And if you do not already know, do you care to play a little game of guess the odds of that fight?
I don't know. So we're catching me live here. I'll say O'Malley minus 150. And
you actually are almost exactly right, but on the opposite side, we got Merab Dvalishvili negative 145 is the current number. So, you know, with Merab being sort of the presumed favorite as a challenger, how do you think that one goes?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I figured O'Malley would be like a betting favorite, but I like Dvalishvili in this fight because I think he can grind him out. I think he could drag him into deep waters, and I think he could get him on the ground and not let O'Malley use his length and distance and all that. I would liken it a lot to Conor versus Chad Mendes. If Chad Mendes had a full camp and was actually a real Chad Mendes going into that fight, that's sort of the way I view this fight.
Yeah, for me, the interesting facet, because obviously the grappling versus striker aspect is the most intriguing part of it. But the second most intriguing part of it for me is Merab in his career has been wildly hittable. And I say that going all the way back to, you know, some of his older fights, like the Marlon Moraes fight, but also in the Henry Cejudo fight. He's been hittable and has been like kind of jelly-legged a little bit on the feet. But he always recovers and then puts a wild pace on people and feels like he can't be put away. And so, like, I think the other interesting aspect of that fight is if it happens and Sean O'Malley lands the big hand and Merab just eats it and comes forward with seven more takedown attempts, how does Sean O'Malley deal with, you know, I mean, I guess we saw him deal with, like, getting his strikes to work against Marlon Vera, but not that kind of pace, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I can't wait to watch it. So when's it going to happen?
You know, it would make a really great International Fight Week main event. I'm just saying, I'm all here for that come July if you want to give it to me then.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, as far as the rest of that card from over the weekend, we saw a lot of prospects who we were hyped on and maybe showed some flashes of brilliance, but pretty much all of them struck out. What'd you make of that?
So for me, the biggest problem I have with that is, you know, the lessons learned here are mostly just that, like, this is a step up and you maybe can't be quite as reckless, because everybody knocked Jelton Almeida for not being a little bit more reckless when he fought Derek Lewis and not, like, really going for it. Then he kind of really goes for it against Curtis Blaydes, and he shows that, like, well, you can't really do that against one of the best five guys in the division. That's just not how it works. And you could say the same thing about Benoit St. Denis. That dude has taken some brutal shots. I mean, he made his UFC debut up a weight class on short notice and took a savage beating, but made it the whole 15 minutes. I think he maybe just had a little bit too much faith in what his chin can do against anybody. And there's levels to this, right? Getting punched by Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos, even if it's up a weight class, even if it's on short notice, is not the same thing as getting punched by Dustin Poirier. So, like, the lesson here is this, that, like, those guys sort of got, like, a big step up in competition and didn't realize that, like, hey, maybe we have to fight this a little safer. And to credit Jack Della Maddalena, the guy who did sort of make his prospect step forward, he's been fighting that kind of, like, slightly smarter fight for the last few fights, and didn't change the approach here against Gilbert Burns. Now, granted, he did lose a couple of those early rounds, But I think that safer approach is something that the prospects need to learn earlier. And maybe Benoit St. Denis didn't get to learn that going from, you know, he fought Matt Frivola last fight and now he's fighting Dustin Poirier. That's a huge jump up. So I think that my big takeaway from those prospect losses is, like, maybe that intermediate step is, like, really important to them in order to learn that, like, hey, there are levels to this and maybe we got to, you know, tuck the aggression back a little bit.
I agree. Well, I'll tell you what we're learning. We're learning a lot about UFC Vegas 88 because we're breaking it down in our favorite segment, Fights, Dogs, and Parlays. We're going to break down a couple of fights, give you a parlay to play, give you a live dog we like. So let's get into it. But before we do, I'm curious, Gumby, does anyone sponsor this edition of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays?
Absolutely. Fights, Dogs, and Parlays brought to you by Game Up Heart Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Heart Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, it's no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage of 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. And it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit, punch, and grape. And it hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team.
All right, let's start with the main event. Heavyweight fight here. Tai Tuivasa, minus 125 favorite. Marcin Tybura, plus 110 dog. Tuivasa is on a 3-fight losing streak, but finds himself a favorite here. Lost to Volkev, Pavlovich, and Cyril Gain, all by KO, or it was an Ezekiel choke loss to Volkev. Tybura, on the other hand, coming off just one loss, but he had two wins before that. He's coming off a loss to Tom Aspinall via TKO. He had beat Ivanov and beat Romanov before that. So he's 2-1 in his last three. 2-2 in his last four. He's a very slight dog here. Who you got?
I'm going to actually go with Tai Tuivasa. I know he's on a bad skid right now, but he's fighting a guy who I'm not particularly worried about in the boxing department against him. Now, of course, Marcin Tybura could sort of swarm him and wind up in a clinch exchange and working on grappling. But we've actually seen flashes of brilliance from Tai Tuivasa when it comes to defending those takedowns. And in addition to that, Marcin Tybura has been a guy who hasn't attempted a lot of takedowns. Like, you want to go back to his stats, you know, he's not out there trying to take people down over and over and over again. And even if you want to take his fight with, let's go back to the Greg Hardy fight. Greg Hardy, miserable at grappling, terrible cardio, and he actually stuffed 3 out of the 5 attempts from Marcin Tybura. I think Tai Tuivasa can do better than that. I think we've seen him do better than that in some fights. And I think, obviously, the concussive blows from Tai Tuivasa play up here. So give me the favorite, Tai Tuivasa, and give me him by knockout while we're at it.
I'm all over it. I like Tuivasa there. I never, ever bet against Tybura. I don't trust him ever in a big spot. And this is a big spot in a main event. Kennedy and Zek. Kachuwu, what was the pronunciation?
Enzinchukwu. Yeah, you got it mostly right.
Yeah, Enzinchukwu, minus 500 favorite to Ovin St. Preux, plus 380 dog. Let's talk about our boy SP. He's coming off a loss to Philip Leans. He beat Mauricio Shogun-Hua before that, and he had two losses before the Shogun-Hua win. So he's 1-3 in his last four. Is the master of the Von Flu, or should I say OSP choke? And then Kennedy, why does my intern not have his record up? Oh, gosh and golly. Let's pull that up right now. But he's a 500 favorite, He's coming off a loss to Dustin Jacoby. He beat Devin Clark and Ian Cutelebo before that. So he's 2-1 in his last three, but coming off a loss, who you got?
So I'm going to go with Kenny Anzachukwu. I think the big piece for me here is that, like, I am not buying stock in Kenny Anzachukwu. I think he does a lot of things that are potentially harmful, especially when he's fighting high level strikers that are like, you know, Dustin Jacoby. But if you go back to the people he's beating there, the Devin Clarks and the Ian Cutelebos of the world, those are people who just make mistakes. And he does a good job of taking advantage of people who make mistakes. He does a good job of beating those guys and seeing when they make their errors. He just doesn't do a good job of creating those mistakes when he's fighting somebody like Jacoby. And now he's fighting OSP, a guy who's lost a billion times out of his last 1 billion in 1 fights. And the problem is here is he makes lots of mistakes. He makes himself really hittable. He tires himself out. He went up to heavyweight for a minute and thought that was a good idea. You know, like I just think OSP makes too many mistakes at this point of his career. And I think Kennedy takes advantage of one here.
All right, we'll move on. I agree completely. Macy Chason, a -220 favorite. Tapani Kanziad, a +180. Our girl Pani is coming up a loss to Caitlin Vieta. She had beat Lena Landsberg before that and lost to Raquel Pennington before that. So Pani is 1-2 in her last three. Macy Chason also finds herself 1-2 in her last three, coming off a loss to Irina Aldana. She'd beat Norma Dumont before that and lost to the aforementioned Raquel Pennington before that. So two fighters, 1-2 in their last three. Chason, a -220 favorite. Kenziad, a +180. Who you got?
So the money's been coming in on Panic or on Macy Chason here because she opened at like -160. She's all the way up to -220. And I think that's actually smart. Even though this number is ballooned up, I think there's still value on Macy Chason here because the fact of the matter is Kian Zod has had issues with people who can bring the physicality to her. You know, that Raquel Pennington fight sticks out. She had no options to get back up when she was taken down. And Chason is actually very good at taking people down. She did that to the aforementioned Irina Aldana when she got hit with the weirdest up kick I've ever seen to the liver and wound up losing a fight that I think she was largely, you know, in good control of. So I think she does the same thing here. Plus, of course, you know, you can go back to their last fight. Granted, it was damn near a decade ago, but Chason kind of bodied her in that one too. So I see no reason why to get away from Chason here.
All right, let's get then to our underdog of the week, our official underdog of the week, and that's Danny Silva, a +140.
So, yeah, I like Danny Silva here against Josh Golubow. I know he's a newcomer coming off of the Contender Series, but, man, did he put a beat down on Angel Pacheco in that fight. He's got amazing pace. He puts together really nice combos. And I think the thing that gives him an advantage here against Josh Golubow is that Golubow is kind of a guy. He's got good power. He's got decent wrestling. But he's sort of a one-and-done guy in his attacks. He likes to throw a big leg kick or a big right hand or something like that. And then he doesn't really stay for an extended exchange. And I think with the pace and the way that Danny Silva gets in your face and is not afraid of extended exchanges, I think Danny Silva is going to get the better of those exchanges. And as a result, is going to pull it out here at +140.
All right. And then we will move then to our parlay to play. Mike Davis, -250. Pair him together with Isaac Dulgarian, and he's a -130. But it gets you, all told, +148 odds. Break it down.
Yeah, so I love Mike Davis in this fight mostly because, you know, first of all, I think Natan Levy has got some real issues with his striking. I mean, I think Mike Davis has been good since the very day he signed with the – actually, when he was on Contender Series, his striking looked fantastic. And I think he's shown, like, signs of brilliance in being able to blend that with his grappling. Now, he's been away for a little while, so obviously you got to worry about that. But I think he's got a really nice matchup here against Levy, a guy who, you know, similar to OSP, has shown that he makes mistakes, particularly on the feet. And then when it comes to the fight with Dulgarian and C-Rod, we've seen Christian Rodriguez give up loads of takedowns before. In fact, he was losing that fight with Raul Rosas with takedowns until Rosas gassed. I think now he's fighting not only a better wrestler than Raul Rosas in Isaac Dulgarian, but a guy who's more dangerous in finishing fights than Raul Rosas, both with his ground and pound, with his hands, with his submission game. Like, I think he's better in all facets, and he's got the gas tank to go along with it. So to see Isaac Dulgarian at only -130, I think that's an obvious piece to throw in some parlays here and get some plus money.
Boom. That wraps up this edition of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays. Let us know how you think we did at Top Turtle MMA on the social media. Gumby, we're having a party here. Let's not let it stop. What should we do next?
We're going to transition now to my interview with Kurt Hollabaugh, the Ultimate Fighter 31 champion. He's going to be talking about his time in the house and getting his first post-fight show or post-show fight at UFC Vegas 89 next weekend. And we're going to get to that interview for you right now. All right, and joining me today is Kurt Hollaball, who fights Trey Ogden at UFC Vegas 89. That fight is on March 23rd. So, Kurt, I wanted to start here. Last time we talked, you were about to be in the tough finale. Now you officially can put the moniker Tough Champion in front of your name. We're a bit removed from that fight, but has it set in? How does it feel? Is it kind of old hat now?
Yeah, you know, it feels great. You know, put a stamp, you know, and I was able to get that Ultimate Fighter trophy crown. And, you know, it feels great. It feels like I definitely accomplished something really big in martial arts, let alone the UFC itself. And, yeah, man, I'm ready to go on to that next step and start trying to build my name up even more.
And obviously, we want to talk about that next step, but I also wanted to just ask you about the show, too, because, you know, obviously you became pretty good friends with some of the guys in the house with you. You know, you knew some of them beforehand, but the veterans really stuck together. They really won everything the whole time. And the guy you beat in the finale, Austin Hubbard, has been offered another fight. He's actually going to fight about a month after you. Did you know about that already? How do you feel about him getting a second chance? Because so many guys don't.
Yeah, no, for sure. I see everybody that was on the, all of us guys kind of keep in touch pretty regularly, you know, and we all want the best for each other. And yeah, you know, I didn't even really have a doubt. I figured, you know, making it to the finals would secure a UFC contract either way. So I wasn't surprised at all to see Austin get that call and get him a second chance. I mean, look, he won fights on the show. He looked good, fought tough guys, you know, and then me and him had that battle in the finale, and which I was fortunate to come away with the win. But yeah, man, I figured Austin would definitely be getting a contract, and it's good to see him, you know, win another fight.
That's awesome to hear that you guys stay in contact too, because so many of the Ultimate Fighters we've seen in the past, you know, there's hostilities between the teams, there's hostilities within the team. Do you feel like your season was kind of unique and there wasn't really a lot of that in there?
Yeah, I think our season was unique because, you know, I feel like being on the actual ESPN, the network, you know, live TV was going to be big. So they wanted to bring in, you know, real fighters, guys that wasn't just there to be a clown in the house and stuff like that. So, and I think that's why everybody was there for the same reason, not to party, not to have a vacation and get drunk in the house and tear stuff up. Everybody was there to, you know, they had a goal. Everybody wanted to be the Ultimate Fighter and win that UFC contract. So I think because of that, and that was the type of guys they brought into the house, I think that's why this season is kind of the way it was, and all the guys kind of, you know, stick together and still communicate.
That's awesome. And just out of curiosity, you don't have to tell us too much about this, but how do you guys go about communicating? Is there like a big group chat? Do you guys, you know, talk on Facebook? Like what ways do you guys keep in touch with one another?
Yeah, we have a group chat on Instagram, I believe. And I mean, we're always supporting each other. We're always posting our fights. If, you know, we have a little something, anything that kind of goes on that group pretty much stays in the group, you know. Like our guy Carlos Vera just fought, was it last weekend or the weekend before? And of course, you know, wherever everybody's in the group cheering him on and wishing him luck, and you know, even after his defeat, you know, trying to keep his spirits up. So that's what I think is the cool thing about, you know, this season of Tough.
That's very cool. Very cool. Now, let's start talking about what's coming up next. And before we do, I'm going to hit a couple of fun things here first, because I noticed we had an Instagram handle name change by the time from the last time I talked to you. I'm seeing The Hurt in there now, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, somewhat of a new nickname, or at least newly being used in the UFC. What sort of sparked the use of Kurt The Hurt Hollaball in getting it to, you know, official nickname status, so to speak?
Yeah, so it's kind of a funny story how that all came about. You know, throughout my whole life, I've had, you know, family members, aunts, uncles, and stuff like that. Even friends always joke around and call me Kurt The Hurt and stuff like that. Never really took on the name or anything. I never was really a guy that had a nickname, but you know, one of the producers on the show was like, Kurt The Hurt. He's like, man, nobody ever called you that? I'm like, yeah, you know, actually a lot of people call me. He's like, man, that's something you really should take up. You should take that and run with it. And I said, man, you know what? I said, I'll tell you what, Joey. I said, if I make it to the finals, I'll rep that name. And, you know, I made it to the final. So I'm like, all right, man, stick to my word. I'm going to rep the name. Kurt the Hurt.
I dig it. I dig it. And it's going to stick. Now, I also wanted to ask you before we started talking about this fight with Trey Ogden, is I see you posting on Instagram, not just supporting other fighters, not just supporting people in your gym, but also supporting your kids who seem to be following quite a bit in dad and in mom's footsteps as well, as I understand. She's an accomplished jiu-jitsu specialist herself. What is that like for you as a dad to watch, you know, your children, some of them kind of young, doing this kind of stuff? Does it make you more nervous? Do you love seeing it? What's it like for you?
Yeah, man, you know, it's really amazing. Definitely makes me nervous at times, but, you know, to be able to live, it's like I'm living a second life, you know, and I get to relive my life again through my kids coming up that are fighting, that are doing jiu-jitsu competitions. And like you said, man, he just turned 4, but I had my 3-year-old who was already competing in jiu-jitsu tournaments, you know, and, you know, my 13-year-old son, he's got a cage fight this Saturday, you know, and I have my daughters too. They grapple jiu-jitsu just like my wife. So, you know, I feel like I get to live a second MMA life or a second fighting career through some of my kids, which is awesome. And it's always awesome to see them come up and follow your footsteps, you know, and that's why I really pride myself on being a real figure or a role model for them as well.
I love that. Now, out of curiosity, how hard is it to flirt the line between dad and coach? Because, you know, obviously there's the stories of Little League coaches, you know, kind of going a little bit too far in that way. And obviously you're a real respectable guy, so that's not a problem. But, you know, obviously some kids learn better from their dads and some learn better from, you know, outside coaches. How hard is it for you to sort of blend those two together?
I mean, sometimes it can get a little rough, you know, but I think for the most part, it's not too bad, you know. You know, I really like to say my kids are really good kids, and they really do well following directions. Me and my 13-year-old, like, I like him. I won't let him slack off, you know. He's fighting in a cage for real. He had an MMA fight, but his opponent got hurt this week, so they switched to another opponent, a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier, but now he's going to have to do a kickboxing match. And I always want to make sure that they're not slacking off whenever they commit to a fight, right? Because the way I am, I'm like, all right, well, if you want to fight, you're going to commit to a fight. We got to put the work in. I can't let you slack off. So sometimes I might be a little hard on them if I see them wanting to slack off or not train very hard. But other than that, man, I've tried to balance it out, coach life and dad life. It equals out.
I love it. I love it. Now, obviously, you're also balancing out camp life right now because you got a big fight coming up with Trey Ogden, your first since winning the show. He's a guy who's got sometimes a similar style to you. He's a grinder. He's a tough, gritty dude. What were sort of your thoughts on him from a stylistic standpoint when that was the fight they offered you?
Yeah, you know, I love the matchup. We have a lot of similarities. We're a lot alike and a lot of different or a lot of the same ways. And, you know, our fighting styles are pretty similar. I still think some of us do certain things a little bit better than the other, but I think it's a good fight and a good matchup for me. And, you know, it's one of these fights to where you can't make a mistake. So, and that's why I've been training so hard to not make these mistakes at that critical time in the fight.
I love it. Now, you know how I end these things. I always like to get out of my fighters. So I'm going to ask you again here. UFC Vegas 89, March 23rd. How you see this one ending?
Man, you know, I always like to say the ref's going to have to jump in and stop the fight, you know? So I'm going to go with a TKO. I think, my pressure is going to be a little too much. I think my grappling is every bit as good as Trey's. And it's whoever can force the other guy to make a mistake. And I think I'll be able to be the one to do that. I want this. I want it bad. So I'm going to go with a TKO.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This has been Kurt Hollabaugh, who fights Trey Ogden at UFC Vegas 89. That fight, once again, March 23rd. Kurt, thanks so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Enjoy being on.
And that's going to do it for another episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast. We want to thank you, the fans, for tuning in each and every week. We would not have a show without you guys. We also want to thank our sponsor, Game Up Hard Hydration, and remind you guys that you can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Top Turtle MMA in both of those locations. And until next week, I'm Dana Gubby Freeland. He's Shockwave Dave Tremonte. And we'll catch you then.